The 9 till Noon Show on Highland Radio.
And you're very welcome back to the programme. Thanks so much for a busy first hour on the communication channels. A caller says the government says that they do communicate with community, but who in the community do they actually talk to? Organisations who are making money off refugees, says a listener. Another, Marilyn MacDonald, thinks this will be enough to fool people. Again, the old rich against the poor. The people have consistently said in particular areas that they don't want huge numbers of unknown people in their area. She said they can't consult. They can consult with communities, but can't the community can't veto. So what's the point in that? Well, the point is, presumably, you have a conversation, you allay fears, you talk about maybe some investment in the area, and the locals go, all right, I'll go with that. That's what presumably the plan is. Hi, Greg. Interestingly, the new approach affords communities the right to have a dialogue and be given information, input their views democratically, similar to the planning process, but they do not have a veto. My understanding is that planning objections can result in the plan not going ahead, essentially a veto. It appears, well, not really, because planning objections are put in and then they're considered, and a planning objection can result in your plan not going ahead, but it can be overruled by the planner as well. But reading on, it appears that the Sinn Féin plan is to tell communities who's coming, a positive change, allow the community object in good faith, presumably without being accused of being racist, another positive, but the migrants will arrive regardless as the communities do not have a veto. Sadly, a new package for more of the same, it appears, believes one listener there. Could we not just put a moratorium on new arrivals under the current EU agreement and put in place systems to allow IPASS access to flight logs so that passport ditchers can be identified and repatriated until we seriously address the overarching issue, the lack of social housing? Well, the bottom line is under the current laws, whether people like it or not, it doesn't matter your background, where you're from, whether you've got a passport or not, whether you dumped your passport down the toilet of the plane or not. As soon as you set foot on Irish soil, you are entitled to claim asylum and be processed as such. So you can't throw people back on planes because they don't have a passport, because they are entitled in that instance to claim asylum, and that has to be processed. Hi, Greg. Kieran the Independent didn't have a problem with Montrose while he was there for nearly 30 years on the salaries pensions. It is Irish private production companies making some of the best TV. RTE just use mine and your licence fee to buy from them and foreign products, not make it. The South Dublin media are unbelievably biased. They are merely a propaganda arm paid for by Joe the Public. That's according to Oisin. Ireland is getting nothing from Europe. They've taken away our fishing and farming. The right wing could have been elected in France, but everyone gathered together to stop them. Immigration is the biggest problem in Europe at the moment. Well, what happened in France was democracy, whether one likes it or not. The left contrived to keep the right out. That, I suppose, is that democracy. Eventually, effectively, it is public votes. Public votes that determine that. Immigration, I think, is recognised as one of the biggest problems in Europe at the moment. Even Ursula von der Leyen seems to concede that in promising extra border security and what have you. Good debate this morning. Enjoyed listening to the different viewpoints and, as always, very balanced, Greg. Hoping to hear John McNulty's name come forward as a candidate for the general election. I believe he could bring an interesting, calming and measured perspective to politics. Thank you, Greg, Caroline and the team. Regards from Breed in Rathmullen. Breed, thanks so much for your input. Greatly appreciated. And thanks to everyone who texts in, even those... not even those, everyone. And a lot, some criticism comes in as well, of course. Doreen believes I'm very argumentative with some of your panel. It's a debate. Do you know what I mean? We have to tease issues out. Every view was heard during that first hour. That's, you know, I mean, I could sit here on my hands and what have you, but you want to hear all sides to it, don't you? All different angles. And the listener then, big boys and girls they are, can make up their own mind. They don't need me or any journalist for that matter leading them by the hand down the garden path. John, Emma, Kieran, well able to make their points, and in all points, in all cases, I'll try and put together an opposing point of view to try and get all views out. Make no apologies of it, and that's fine. That just means that I want all views to be heard on this programme while I'm in the seat anyway. So does that mean the Dee Forbes situation is brushed under the table? If it happened in the US or maybe England, they'd be made pay back the money or maybe even end up in prison. Well, like, my... the only thing I can determine from it is that everything that's happened over the last year since it all blew up is that's fine, because RTE are getting more money than they had before it. The licence fee is still in place, so it's a big thumbs up for RTE. They've won significantly there. What does the panel think about the American Biden administration and the situation in Gaza with Israel? I'm more interested in what listeners think about that. Kamala had her views on it. She seemed to have been quite firm with the Israeli leadership, saying, look, this has to end. What's happening to the people of Gaza can't continue. I'm not sure if you class her as the Biden administration, so you'd have to be more specific as to what you want to talk about. The undocumented Irish are still a problem in America. Why is no president committed to helping the Irish become legal in America? Please ask Kieran, why did you feel the need to enter politics? Well, he answered that over the course of the that piece. A couple more before we take a break. Hi, Greg. We didn't pay the TV licence last year to show our disgust at the way RTE wasted taxpayers' money. However, we paid it this time, not because we're for RTE, but because we were afraid of being taken to court over non-payment, as some people were in Donegal this week. I think a lot of people paid due to fear rather than support. And part of these plans unveiled by government is that Unpost will have more resources to chase up non-payers, so more people end up in court if they don't pay. Good morning, Greg. I've been enjoying the debate this morning. I had that one already. Thank you very much for that. Where are all the great exposers of corruption today writing nonsense because they're afraid to upset their paymasters or future jobs? We get more info from online sources and citizens, citizen journalists than the mainstream media. Okay, that's fine. The thing is, if I had... Here's an honest question, right? So say, for instance, my ambition was to work for a political party. Say I said, really, you know, I've been doing this now for 20 years. I wouldn't mind doing something else. What's a good option? Well, an awful lot of journalists go into PR for political parties or individuals. Big money, you know, 80, 90 grand a year and all the benefits that go with that. If I kind of sort of thought, right, that is kind of what I want to do, it would have to subconsciously affect how you present a program like this, wouldn't it? You'd sort of have to, you would find yourself being favouring one over the other, or maybe not, and asking a question that could scupper your future plans. Like, I say that because most of the people working in press relations in government are former journalists, you know, and their mates are working in RTE or whatever, and it's a cosy little setup down there. Fantastic for them. But if I or another journalist wanted to be in that, I don't. Never. Not in your Nelly. But if I wanted to be in that, would I be start favouring one person over another or being less balanced? Or maybe some people don't feel unbalanced, but I try and be very balanced, right? So I think just the small country, the relationship between politics and a lot of the media means that, you know, some of this favourable coverage is almost inevitable, isn't it? Especially then if one group of parties are actually responsible for writing checks for €750 million. Okay, we are joined on the programme now by Teresa McDade from Letterkenny and overseeing an Irish athletics team at an Olympics Games, an Olympic Games for a second time after the Tokyo Games in 2020. Teresa, how are you getting on? Good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg. Getting on really well. A little overcast here now this morning at the track. I think you probably can see it there behind me. Settled in. I'm here a week yesterday and we have about maybe 75% of our team on camp now. So, yeah, it's all camp has worked out really well as we expected. Athletes are happy, coaches are happy, and training is going really well.
Are you insulated to some extent from the buzz, Therese? Obviously, the opening ceremonies this evening, there has been competition up until now, but it really kicks off this evening. Are you getting a sense of the buzz over there, or is it all sort of business and keeping your mind in the game?
Well, I think it really is a little bit of both. We are certainly feeling, you know, that love, and particularly we all watched the Rugby Sevens last night after dinner, so there's certainly that feeling. But yes, the ethos of the camp is very much allowing this time for athletes to chill, to focus in on their training, and to sort of kind of prepare for the madness of the village and the competition. And we have in our sort of kind of dining room, if you like, we have a large screen or a large projection screen in the wall. So we'll be tuning into the opening ceremony tonight, definitely.
Now, you're a veteran of these types of competitions now. You've been involved as an operations or team manager since 2018. We haven't had the French Olympics yet, so I can only ask about the build-up and sort of the anticipation or the mood. How does this compare to previous competitions? I'm thinking Tokyo, but also the other major competitions and championships you've been involved in.
I think, well, and certainly Tokyo is definitely out there on its own, a very, very different experience the very different experience. And again, I'm so excited for athletes that they'll get the true Olympic experience this time round, which they didn't because of all the restrictions and Tokyo last time. But no, it definitely has a different feel about it. Even locally here, the torch, as we would refer to, or the flame, as they refer, came through our village, our town, Fontainebleau here, and they had a little bit of a ceremony at the track here. And the whole place was absolutely buzzing, so there was a huge amount of crowd in that. But in terms then of major championships, and I suppose that's very much our ethos and our target, is to keep things on track and to keep that consistency and our consistency of roles and responsibilities, and athletes and coaches know where they're at and they have what their requirements are. And I suppose for me, it's there to facilitate coaches and athletes to have the performance, their best performance they can.
I can see some people running up and down behind you. Are they members of our team?
They are. I think that's Charlene. They are just at the moment gone past. And actually, Mark English is warming up there at the moment as well, too.
All right, brilliant. Is it raining?
Yeah. It is.
All right, so you feel like you're at home. That's fantastic.
Exactly. So it's very, very warm.
Yes. I mean, what are your expectations, Teresa? Because we're tiny. We're a tiny country with the size of another country's city, if the truth be told. And even in the Northwest, we sort of overachieve, I think, to some extent on a national stage. But on a national stage, we almost overachieve on an international platform. So what are our goals or expectations, or how is that sort of framed in the run-up to these? I mean, we want a medal, of course, don't we?
Oh, well, yes, please. And I think that's key for the moment, is managing those expectations, and particularly after the success of Rome, which is Europeans, and World Championships is another step again, and then Olympics is really another step again. But certainly I think our results from particularly even Budapest last year, with having 2 fourths in the individual events, having a fifth and a sixth in our relays, certainly augurs very well, and we are within our rights to have those expectations. And I feel even particularly with Rome and even our recent build-in, athletes are running even better. So yes, and a medal for athletics would change so much. It would mean so much. It would have a massive impact on our funding. I think it would have a massive impact on our next generation of sports in terms of inspiring the next generation. So yes, it would be massive. But like all athletes and coaches, and we will do the same, we will take each step one at a time, and we will turn up and we will look at the heat and we will move forward and into the next round and the next round.
So. Yes, and we can follow sort of the connection between success, investment, and resources and success then, can't we? I mean, you look at what we with the High Performance Centre for Boxing and all that kind of stuff. Like, it does work. It can reap rewards. And even in Donegal, for an example, before we had a proper organised athletic setup, it's set up, bring people in. We've got some fantastic people that work with our youth. Next thing you know, you're pumping out a Mark English or a Kelly McGrory.
Exactly. And funny, one of the stats one of our coaches was talking about yesterday was actually the number of athletes that had medalled at community games back at their relevant time. So, and very much it starts with that, with grassroots. And for my own philosophy, particularly, you know, there's talent everywhere. You just have to coach it properly and allow that opportunity. And I think if you look particularly at our relay teams and our women's relay team and the likes of Kelly McGrory locally and Lauren Cadden from Sligo, you know, when you provide opportunity and the right environment, it's amazing what can happen. Yeah. And it's just how people can really step up to that mark and improve and be inspired by that environment. And I suppose that's key for us, is managing that environment and making sure that we have that high performance environment for coaching, but obviously in a relaxed way as well.
And is it the case really, Therese, and I won't hold you much more, like often what we're talking about is it's the 0.5% that can be the difference, isn't it, in winning and losing. And that's where you really have to probably start investing that money, that just slight bit of an area in the talent of an athlete that you can eke out just that little bit extra.
Yeah, and it's sometimes like when you come down, it's almost like marginal gains. And again, with track and field, we are almost a diverse sport. It's very different to team sport. We are a team of individuals, and everyone, that is very much the environment that we create, is that everyone is afforded the opportunity to prepare in the best way that's actually going to facilitate them to get their best performance. And that can be even yesterday, say, for example, on the track, we had a number of sprinters, and they probably were all, every single one of them were doing their individual and their own particular workout suitable to them, and to actually get that last, as you say, that 0.5%. And I think for me, you know, that's where that's so key for me in terms of managing the warm-up area. And as a coach myself, I know, I've been there, done that, I know what it's like. And it's that almost last, you know, hour or so that people are in that warm-up area, which I often describe as akin to A&E on a Saturday night. Mm. It's chaotic, and it's just managing to keep that area very calm and making sure that everybody is where they're supposed to be and allowed to have that preparation that they're entitled to before they go into the arena.
This is by the by, but how much effort goes into practicing the baton changeover? We've seen so often, right, the dreams and hopes dashed by. Where is it? Where? Now, I'm not trying to bring any bad luck on our teams, right, okay? But you talk about them training individually. Sometimes not our team, but other teams, you wonder, yeah, fantastic, but did you practice passing the baton to the next person?
Oh, of course, there's a huge amount of preparation in that. And it's relative to the event. And the 4x1, for example, it's much more technical and much more work gone into it. 4x4, yes. And we've already had one relay session, and we will have another one now tomorrow again. And even on some of the Athletics Ireland socials, like the relay practice even and competition starts with just even activation and getting those drills going, and we have a little just even sort of getting the brain switched on and everything else. So, but no, very much so. And even the technique of how to receive the baton and where it has to be handed over and who's responsible for it. And again, in a 4x4 where there can be, shall we say, a little bit of argy-bargy on the changeovers. And yes, we practice that as well with each other.
Yeah, I feel like that. I'm a runner, not a Deliveroo driver. finally, what about the ceremony tonight? Does everyone get an option to go and see it? It's going to be unique. For the first time, it's outside of a stadium. It's a security nightmare for the French and for the people of Paris, no doubt about it. But it's going to be a spectacle. Does every member of our team, in the front of and behind the scenes, get an opportunity to go and be a part of that, Therese? Obviously, we have an active role in it, but just the wider team and the majority going to witness this bit of history?
No, and on this occasion, because it's actually on a boat, I think we are limited to somewhat. But generally, the highest percentage of athletes will choose not to go to the opening ceremony because, like most ceremonies of that kind, they tend to be long. You tend to have to be there quite early. It tends to go on for late. So very much athletes and coaches are focused on performance outcomes at this stage. So most will choose not to go, or those that are going to go would have prepared accordingly and would have known it for a timeout.
But what about you, Teresa? We're potentially looking at Celine Dion. We're potentially looking at Lady Gaga. Can you not just put them to bed? Can you not just put them to bed and slip off?
We're really well represented by Sarah Lavin is going to represent us. So no better person to represent us on anything. So yeah,
and brilliant. We'll no, be, no better person than yourself to represent Letterkenny and Donegal, along with Mark English, who is superb. Kelly McGrory from Lahey as well. Rachel Dyer from Raphoe. There's other connections, not only within the Irish team, but actually also with other teams, other Donegal people involved in it. We've so much reason to be proud. And these crop of athletes that we have are really inspirational, and hopefully they'll drive the new generation as well. Hi, good luck to Teresa and all the Irish team from all at Donegal Community Games, and from all of us as well, Teresa. Thanks for being so generous with your time.
Thank you so much.
And thanks for being such a great camera woman. You captured a bit of training in the background, the track. Well done to you.
If I can swing around, I'm let you have a look.
Well, if you could run over and get an interview with Mark English, I'll be your best friend.
I'm only joking.
Take care, Teresa.
Okay,
bye-bye.
All the best.
God bless you. Having fun. Enjoy it as well. That's Letterkenny's own Teresa McDade. Lovely lady and really generous with us. Literally on the track there, those of you watching will have seen Charlene running up and down in the background, and Mark was over at one of the shoulders getting ready, and also we insight into the background of the Donegal camp, chatting to one of the key players in the back room there. 086 60 25000. Sandra McRae says best of luck to Teresa and Team Ireland. Indeed we all join in that. Yeah, as I say, there is some speculation that Celine Dion might perform, which would be one of her first performances for quite some time. Many of you want to watch the documentary and be aware of the condition she has. That would be really quite remarkable. She's French-Canadian, isn't she? Or Canadian-French. And also, there was a piano with someone who looked very much like Lady Gaga on Spotted. Okay, because there's a flotilla. Isn't that the right phrase? A flotilla. 10,000 athletes will be on this flotilla of boats along 6 kilometres, that's 3.7 miles route from the waterway, which has been under intense scrutiny for its cleanliness. And I think there was I don't know whatever came of it because there was no backup, but there was a protest, people protesting at it. And they asked people further up the Seine to throw all their poo-poo and wee-wee into the sea, so that, or into the river, so it would flow down into Paris. I'm not sure if anything ever come of that. But anyway, there you go. That's what people will protest. And that was one of the protests. All right. Contacted by concerned listeners in the St. Johnston area. Neil joins me first. Neil, good morning to you. Thanks for chatting to me. I know it's something you obviously thought long and hard about, but judging by the text, you're sort of at your wit's end, Neil.
Yes.
Oh, is that, Philomena, I beg your pardon. Philomena, good morning to you. Sorry, my mistake, Philomena. So what is the situation? What are you living through?
Well, every weekend, these cars, they started off a few cars down at the junction. That wasn't too bad. But they're getting more every weekend, and they're lined up now in front of our own house. And the noise of them, and it goes on there to 12 and 1 o'clock, every Saturday night, but last week it was a Friday night. And at least there were about 15 cars lined up, taking all their turns, doing these donuts or whatever you call them, and the noise is just stand clear. Terrible.
Now, for listeners, this is in the St. Johnston area outside the council yard at the junction. Presumably you've contacted the Gardaí, Philomena. What have the Gardaí done or said?
The Gardaí came one night there and they just sat until the cars all moved away. And for an hour after that, then they come back again. And, you know, it's just terrible that you can't get to your bed or anything at night, and the noise. And just waiting to be a fatality some night.
And there's different age groups of people. I think you said in a message to us, a lot of older people live there. They can't sleep at night and presumably worried, Philomena.
It's very worrying, yes. And it's, we're two pensioners, myself and my husband, and there's other ones lives along here, and the ones has a young family here. And, you know, it's just not, it's terrible. So it is.
Now, Philomena, would you be expecting this to happen again tonight?
Yes, I would.
Right.
It was nearly always a Saturday night, but last weekend it was a Friday night and a Sunday night.
Okay, so will you do me a favour, Philomena? Is it okay if we ring you back on Monday morning to find out if this happened again and then we can contact Gardaí and see what their operational response is to that? Is it okay if we hope it doesn't happen this weekend, right? But would you mind if we check back with you on Monday to see if anything was done about it?
Yes, Yeah, that's okay. That's grand then.
Right, okay.
Thank you.
All right, well, don't. All right, Philomena. All right, bye-bye. Okay, that's Philomena then. Listen, there's concerns, too, that there might be drinking drugs there and also a sense that maybe the Gardaí might be scared of these people. So that's diffing every weekend in St. John's and outside the council yard at the junction. People are scared in their homes. They can't sleep at night. So what we'll do is we'll see if it persists again this weekend and can follow it up in much greater detail next week from Monday onwards. So we'll check back with Philomena on Monday and see what the situation was at the weekend. I'm sure Caroline or myself or Shannon will remember to do so. A caller says, didn't hear Greg this morning. What? Okay, right, that's fine, that hurts. Didn't hear Greg this morning, but you must have been bullying a Fine Gael rep if Doreen texted in. Well, she did text in. Hello, Doreen. But no, of course I wasn't bullying. Asking questions, my God. We're getting very soft in this county. You can't ask questions anymore or try and get to the bottom of a policy or anything. Anyway, John's perfectly happy with the line of questioning and he shook my hand as he left. Tired of the immigration debate, says another. It never solves the issues abroad anyways. We bring in thousands and 2,000 or 3,000 more are born into the same horrible situations. I'd much rather see money being put towards actually making positive change abroad in all these countries that are often brutally corrupt. Indeed, but listen, the bottom line is a lot of these people are leaving for a life that all the investment in their area perhaps couldn't be achieved. And climate's a big issue as well. Good topics discussed today. It's always nice to hear the viewpoints from a mix of different people from various backgrounds and experiences, and especially nice to hear someone on from in through South Donegal. Thanks, Greg. And yeah, I get you. And we do tap into South Donegal as well. And that's the advantage of bringing people remotely. We can sort of get them from wherever they are. Where are all the great exposers of corruption today writing nonsense because they're afraid to upset their paymaster? Most journalists, says another, are now press officers or political advisors for ministers. So, of course, they're not going to upset the government. They're all looking at cosy jobs for themselves. But the bottom line is now you question too hard and you're ostracised. You're taken out of the loop. Your access is withdrawn. And that's the democracy we live in now, that if people don't like the questions but journalists ask them, you can just disengage and it's fine. Nothing comes of it. It's all good in the hood. Which I think is quite a shame. Right, okay, we're going to talk about news that TEN-T is moving to planning. We were going to talk about this to the panel, but just didn't get time. It's potentially big news, but it could still be a while before we see a spade in the ground, metaphorically speaking. We're going to bring in a person to talk about that in a moment. Hi, Greg and your panel. In relation to funding for content for RTE, League of Ireland club were playing in the Champions League on Wednesday, a packed stadium, and RTE did not show the match. Their coverage of the domestic League of Ireland is shocking. This would not happen in any other country in Europe. Another, RTE doesn't know where Donegal is, and as for the weather, look at BBC Northern Ireland, always gives the best weather forecast. Another morning, Gregory RTE, yet another case of the government not listening to the electorate. They do so at their peril. People will remember this election time. I suggest they won't, respectfully, but we'll see. Another RTE, sure, they show nothing but repeats, and all the other programmes are from the UK or Britain. Okay. Dennis Kelly is director of the Northwest Regional Assembly. He joins us now. Good morning, Dennis. Thank you for your time.
Good morning, Greg, and thanks very much for inviting me on to your show this morning.
Yeah,
and good morning to all your listeners.
Yeah, and it's off the back of good news, Dennis. The TEN-T project moving to planning. It's another hurdle. I mean, we're not there yet, but you know, what do you think this means in terms of the prospects for the projects?
I think it's absolutely fantastic news, Greg, and I would like, I suppose, to compliment Donegal County Council and the work that they've been doing. And it's been led through, I suppose, Damien McDermott in the National Roads Office and Anya McHugh. So it's fantastic news. And I suppose within the context of the Northern and Western Regional Assembly, where I come from is looking at it from a very strategic perspective, not just the fact that I'm from here, but my work is to look at it from the perspective of the Northern Western region, which is Connacht, Ulster counties, the three Ulster here in the Republic. And the remit of the regional assembly is really we're between the central government and, if you want, the local government, so Donegal County Council in this respect. And the type of work that we look at is we're trying to develop, I suppose, better places, enhance the competitiveness of this region. And we do try to act as a collaborative platform for all various agencies. So our role is looking essentially at the regional development potential of the area, trying to have better policy. So we're aligning the national planning framework with the regional needs in this area.
But you could say, I suppose, Dennis, that the historical underinvestment in the Northwest means that even if the A5 and the 10T projects were all finished tomorrow, we're only really coming up to a level the rest of the country is already at, if you know what I mean, which would be fantastic. I'm not being negative, don't get me wrong, but we need much more positive discrimination, I think.
Oh, absolutely, Greg, and this is where I'm coming to. If you look at the policy that we have in the regional spatial and economic strategy, we have identified our infrastructural deficits. We've called them out. We've identified that we have a deficiency in our infrastructure. When you look at the actual metrics at a European level, it's already showing this up. I mean, when you look at what it is we're trying to do, the key reason that businesses come to this region is for is going to be, have you got compact urban centres? Have you got connectivity? You know, are you growing your third level infrastructures? When you look at the EU metrics, you see that we are actually very seriously deficient in our connectivity.
And going backwards,
And we have called that out as, and we're advocating very strongly for the infrastructure improvements for high quality roads. That's the 10T, the Donegal 10T, it's the A5, it's the N2, you know. Also on the rail infrastructure, and I know that there's a draft rail policy out there. And I mean, the Northern Western Region Assembly have said that we do have concerns in relation to that. Because, yes, it's fantastic that it is looking at linking the Letterkenny and Derry and on down to Dublin. But what about the Western Seaboard? I mean, the people here in Donegal, we do need access to all the other urban centres of scale. The critical issue for the Northern Western region is our urban centres of scale, that we don't have them. We need to build them.
But Dennis, like, the reality is we've seen the CSO predict our population edging towards 7 million. Or perhaps even beyond that in the course of 30-odd years. The bottom line is when we talk about a country being full, and this is not the migration conversation, it's often about services and capacity, right? I mean, really, governments should be putting in 20, 30-year plans, because you can't build houses without access to proper water. You can't build factories and what have you without proper access to electricity. You can't develop really without proper road and rail infrastructure. So, like, any government really who looks at the CSO statistics and wonders where everyone's going to go, like, it's actually essential. This is not necessarily even about what we deserve right now. It's what would be required for this country's growth into the future. And I think that's the strongest argument for a major investment in power, water, road and rail and whatever else I might have forgotten.
Yeah, and I suppose, Greg, you're actually reiterating the call of the Northern Western Regional Assembly to a large extent in that we know the plan. We think the National Planning Framework is good. The basics of it is good. But it's the implementation of the National Planning Framework is what we're calling out. And we're saying we need positive discrimination. We need to be levelling up effectively on the investment, the legacy of underinvestment in this region. And we have identified what we would call core strategic development proposals that really do need to be developed in order to realise the huge potential that we have in this region. I mean, when you look at a national level, they do focus on the five cities. And I think they need to be looking at it from the all-island perspective. We have the Northwest City region, the Letterkenny, Derry, Strabane, and that's a huge agglomeration, as we call it in economic terms. That has huge potential for the Donegal area. We have our offshore potential in the renewable energies. We have the largest fishing harbour in the country. So we need to be connecting up these in an integrated way. And that's what we that's what the National Planning Framework actually says. It says that we need to put the we need to build these urban centres of scale. We need to put the infrastructure in them. But when we actually
Where's the plan, though, Dennis? Exactly? You were just going on to that, sorry. It's just that where is the plan? Who's actually going to make this happen? Like, with respect to those involved, they can't really get a traffic plan across the line in Dublin. You know, whatever was there now has been watered down into a drip of what it was previously. It just concerns me that if you can't get what seems seemingly is relatively simple situation in Dublin resolved, and we're talking and we're talking and we're talking, and it's great the 10-2's moved to planning, but where is the plan for delivery? Where is the reality of, where is the targets? You know, we do everything in this country in five-year cycles. You know, where's the actual 30-year plan? Like, that's ridiculous notion that there'd be a million electric cars on the road by 2030. I mean, who signed off on saying that might actually happen? You know, so there's a lot of things that sort of might make people question their faith in how this is all going to happen.
Yeah, and I suppose that's why we were calling, as an assembly, we had suggested there should be a Minister for Regional Development. Now, whatever you call it, doesn't really matter, but we have called that out, because when we see the investment that's going on in the country, I'm not saying that one individual department isn't doing the right thing in spending their money, but they need to be looking at where the impact is, because the impact has been that we've been underinvested in this region, and there's serious gaps, and those gaps are increasing. Interestingly, I seen at the McGill summer there, the Taoiseach made reference to seemingly thinking along those lines as well. And we did meet the former Taoiseach in Monaghan. We spent a full half day with him, and we advocated very strongly for infrastructure in the Northwest. And I do feel he got it. I do feel he got it. Now, it's like everything, you have to keep moving on these. It's a moving target, but we need to ensure that everybody in the region is actually saying the same thing.
Well, we're that's it, because I'm looking at that map over your right shoulder as I see it, right? And Derry and Tyrone on in there, unless I'm missing it. So we've got Donegal County Council with Derry, this sort of northwest city status, right? Then you've got your organisation there that seems to focus on counties in the Republic. I just wonder, really, are we all on the same page? And
we don't actually the Northern Western Region Assembly, when you look at the region spatial and economic strategy, we do acknowledge that we have an administrative functional area, but in the strategy we actually say we don't really recognize borders like that.
Well, the map over your right shoulder does. I'd work on that for a start.
Yeah, I think if you look at the recent spatial economic strategy, you'll actually see the map that shows, for example, in the Donegal, we showed that it's the catchment for it's a flow into Derry, for it's a flow into Tyrone. Then when you come round to the Cavan Monaghan area, we're talking of the catchment that flows into the north. So we don't actually, and then when you look at down in the Galway area, we actually recognise that the catchment is bigger than
I guess
that.
You're okay.
We try to say, look at the catchment, you have to talk with people and their communities, but and not the administrative boundaries.
Yeah, I get you, of course. And I just wonder, Dennis, and this is not a commentary on who's in government or whether there's a border poll or isn't a border poll, but in reality, when we're talking about planning perhaps so far in front of us now, we really need to be looking at it. Of course, we can have a regional focus, but I think we need to be looking at what a future 32 County Ireland might look like in terms of, you know, planning for the future, our infrastructure. Like, will a connection, stronger connection between one area and another be more important in a 32 context than do you get where I'm coming from? Like,
I say,
10, 20, 30 years down the line. But I think if we're planning, we probably have to factor that in if we're not already.
We do, Greg. I suppose I have to be sensitive in those spaces, and what I think I've said really is we look about people and their catchments and their communities, and we do see it that it should be within the all island context.
Yeah, I think so.
And that's why we put so much emphasis on the northwest city region. We don't have obviously any jurisdiction outside the 26 counties, but we do have to recognise that we're talking about people and communities, and our communities community up in the border area is totally, you know, it doesn't recognise the border,
no,
really.
Of course,
se.
I get
that. And that's why it's so important that we do that. And in fairness, I think government is in that space, Greg, as well. There's political sensitivities and all of that. But that's why, I suppose, you have the North-South grouping and you have the whole work that Donegal and Derry is doing together and has been consistently doing now for, well, this last 10, 15 years, which I'd say they always were.
Brilliant.
But that is exactly, you're exactly reflecting our feeling. Our feeling really is we need to recognise the gaps in the investment that is coming to the northern and western region.
Mm-hmm.
We need to acknowledge that there are communities that are cross-boundary, and we need to recognise the huge importance of the northwest city of Letterkenny, Derry, Strabane, and we need to be providing the infrastructure that links the likes of the northwest city region with Galway, with Dublin, with Belfast. So we do need the 10T. It is moving forward. It is fantastic to hear that. I think it's really positive news. The A5 obviously is another additional factor in that, and also the connection over to Belfast.
Yeah.
These are critical for us. We're not talking politics here.
But,
we're talking about infrastructure and
needs
of this part of the country.
The 10T. I mean, this is why I get cynical. Sorry, Dennis, but so the 10T from Letterkenny to the border, effectively. I mean, surely if we were serious about this, those plans, when we're going through the planning or compulsory purchase or whatever it might be, should provide for enough space for at least a single carriage railway. Like that's if we were serious about it. So now's the time. It's probably too late now. But surely if we're serious about ever connecting Letterkenny to Derry, now is the time that when we're building a big road from Letterkenny to the border, that we make sure that there is included in the planning is the space and for the provision of a rail to run alongside that road into the future. And in the absence of that, I just don't think we're serious.
I don't disagree with you on that kind of an idea, but I suppose the focus really is in trying to get this one over the line. We've spent decades now trying to plan for this. As you will know, coming up through the gap, we've had the whole issue of Belfast Northern Bypass, and I would have been involved in that in my past life, having been 25 years with Donegal County Council. And do you know what? It's Here I am, and we see another proposal on the table, but it is a hugely exciting proposal in fairness for the Northwest.
All right, Dennis,
it's something I hope that everybody will get behind.
Yep, we're fully behind it, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
All right, listen, Dennis, thank you very much for your time. Take care of yourself. All right, and you can check out Northwest Regional Assembly. That's Dennis Kelly, the chair of it. You can check out more on that if you're interested in it. And sorry for sounding cynical; it's not my intention. Now, there's one caller contacted us, and it's not true, saying that they saw something somewhere whereby it was €25 to stream the crowning cabaret of the Mary from Dunloe Festival. It's not. It's perfectly free on TG Cahir. But just if any of you else come across that, was there a link or something shared? Because if there's a bit of a scam there, we'd like to get on top of it and get the info out. So if you did see that, it's not true, by the way, but if you did see it, let us know, and it means we can flag it to the organisers they can put out some info on it or whatever. But it's not the case. I'm just interested if you saw it. News on the way.